You can make more progress faster in a shorter period of time by learning how to get along well with the other important people in your life than you could under any other circumstances or with any other skill. Charles Schwab, the founder of U.S. Steel, said, "I will pay more for the ability to get along with other people than for any other skill in America." Fully 85% of your success in life will depend upon the quality and quantity of your relationships. In every society and in every organization, the person who knows the greatest number of people and is known to them in a favorable way is almost always the person with the greatest power and influence. Dr. Abraham Maslow, in his famous Hierarchy of Needs, suggested that the need for affiliation, to be liked and accepted and get along with a work or social group, is absolutely indispensable to your mental health. Maslow demonstrated that this need to be effective with other people is a psychological drive or hunger that must be satisfied before we can feel free to pursue the satisfaction of higher needs, such as self-esteem and self-fulfillment. Most of us learn relationship skills as we grow up, and we take them largely for granted. These skills, however, are indispensable to your self-confidence and to everything you achieve in life. They satisfy your ego needs and your social needs, and they're closely linked with physical well-being and longevity. For example, according to the experts, people with weak social ties are 3 times more likely to die prematurely than people with strong social ties. Divorced men die from heart disease, cancer, and strokes at double the rate of married men. The rate of all types of cancer is as much as 5 times higher for divorced men and women compared to their married counterparts. Your ability to send and receive, to communicate and interact happily with the important people in your life, is a key determinant of your sense of self-efficacy and your feeling of self-confidence. People with the highest levels of self-confidence are those who feel themselves capable of dealing successfully with almost any human situation. People who tend to feel uncertain and insecure with new people and new interpersonal situations invariably have low levels of self-confidence. For you to feel terrific about yourself, you have to feel terrific about your relationships. You have to feel confident and capable and effective when you think of your friends, your family, your coworkers, and situations involving other people. Fortunately, this is another example of a cause and effect relationship, and you can learn the attitudes and the behaviors you need to be popular and well-liked wherever you go. The law of indirect effort explains relationships very well. It says that you get things with people much more rapidly through indirect means rather than through direct means. In fact, when you become a relationship expert, it will be because you are no longer thinking about yourself at all. It's when you are perfectly natural and you let your personality shine through without attempting to shade it or change it in any way that you perform at your best. You are more relaxed, more spontaneous, more humorous, and more enjoyable to be with. To start with, remember always that in human relationships, it's not what you do, but who you are that counts. You can never be more or less or different from the person you really are. Most people who have problems with others are trying to be something that they're not, or even worse, they're trying to be something that they think will please the other person. As Francis Bacon said, "This maketh a man who can in no way be true to his own ends." When you practice the law of concentration and dwell upon your values and goals and upon the kind of person you want to be, these thoughts soak deep into your subconscious mind and cause you to act in a manner consistent with them. The law of correspondence says that your outer world is merely a reflection of your inner world. Your job is to continue to work on your inner world and let the outer world take care of itself. Whenever you have a problem or difficulty with another person, a good exercise is to turn within and ask yourself, "What is it in me that's causing this other person to behave this way?" For example, if you have a problem with your child or one of your employees or friends, always turn within and accept responsibility for triggering the other person's behavior, whatever it is. It may turn out that the way the other person is acting has nothing to do with you, but by holding yourself accountable instead of blaming or looking outside yourself for the reason, you take full control of your own mind and you keep yourself calm and focused. Your self-esteem, how much you really like yourself, will determine how much you like others and how well you get along with them. The more you like yourself, the more you like others, and the more they like you. One of the most important principles in understanding how power and influence work in our society is called the law of reciprocity. This law is based on the age-old discovery that whenever you do something for another person, he or she feels a sense of obligation to you and can only remove that sense of obligation by doing something of an equal or greater value for you. It also happens that if you do something to another person, he or she will also have a desire to reciprocate in kind. The law of reciprocity explains why many people make more progress in 5 years than the average person may make in 20 years of equally hard work in the same industry and sometimes in the same company. The reason is that smart people seek out every opportunity to do things for other people in advance. Over time, they build up a reservoir of goodwill and favors that cause people to want to help them get ahead. It's another example of sowing and reaping, cause and effect. It's a fact of life that the more of yourself that you give away to others with no direct expectation of return, the more you'll receive back, sometimes from the most unexpected sources. The winner in life is the person who is always looking for opportunities to give. The loser is the one who is always insisting upon getting before they give anything. When you're younger, you usually have far more time than money, so you give of your time. As you become older and more financially secure, you have less time but more money, so you give financially. But always the rule is to give whenever and wherever you possibly can, knowing that it will eventually come back to you as an abundant harvest. In your relationships, the same rule holds true. In every relationship, you want to make the other person feel glad that he or she spoke to you. And you do this by making other people feel important. One wonderful result of this principle of reciprocity is that everything you do to raise the self-esteem of another person causes your own self-esteem to go up. When you do and say things that cause people to like themselves and feel more confident about themselves as people, you like yourself more and you feel more confident about yourself. So, in order to get along terrifically with others, you use the law of indirect effort and focus your attention on the other person. Imagine there's a spotlight on a swivel between you. Whenever you're talking about yourself or thinking about yourself in a conversation, the spotlight is on you. Whenever you are on the spot, you will feel self-conscious and insecure. You will often be unnatural, and in attempting to please the other person, you will usually end up pleasing no one. The solution is to put the spotlight on the other person. Dale Carnegie once wrote that you can make more friends in a few minutes by becoming genuinely interested in other people than you can in a year trying to get other people to be genuinely interested in you. Everyone's self-esteem is lower than it needs to be. Everyone needs to have their self-images validated and reinforced. Everyone needs to feel more valuable and important to others. And if you will consciously and deliberately give people what they want and need, they will reciprocate by giving you friendship and popularity and a welcome wherever you go. The starting point in succeeding with people is to be agreeable. Be an easy person to get along with. Be pleasant and cheerful and positive, rather than argumentative and difficult. Make a habit of nodding and agreeing and going along with what others say, even if it's a little different from what you would say or do. Be relaxed and pleasant and a pleasure to be with. When I was younger, I used to get into arguments with everyone about everything. I was always pointing out the weaknesses in people's positions and identifying the flaws in their arguments. And I was well-researched. However, I found myself spending more and more time alone. People began avoiding me. If I went up to a group at a party or a meeting, the members of the group would see me coming and begin dispersing immediately. No one wanted to get into a verbal battle with me, so they avoided conversation with me altogether. I learned a valuable lesson from that. I learned that the most important thing in life is to be effective in your relationships with others, not to be right. A question that has helped me over the years is the question, what's important here? You'll often find that being right or wrong doesn't really matter. If the other person's position is obviously incorrect, they'll figure it out for themselves in no time at all. But a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. You may win the argument, but you can lose the friendship. If you really disagree and you feel that you must say something, protect the self-esteem of the other person by using Benjamin Franklin's method of stating your opinion in a very tentative way. Instead of telling a person that he or she is wrong or misinformed, say something like, "I could be wrong, but I had always thought it was this way." If you show that you're open and willing to change your mind, that you're flexible rather than fixed in your ideas, people will enjoy being around you much more and will enjoy discussing different issues with you. The second key to winning with other people is the practice of acceptance. Each person, from early infancy, forms their self-image by the way that others react to them. The self-image of your children or your employees is largely determined by the way you treat them. If you treat people as valuable and important, they see themselves and think about themselves as valuable and important, and they respond warmly and positively to you. In fact, the very first thing that happens when two people meet, especially for the first time, is that a certain level of acceptance is established or not established between them. Much obnoxious behavior is simply a cry for help. It's a cry to be accepted and liked by other people. Psychotherapists are taught to practice what is called unconditional positive regard. This is a way of being calm, positive, and accepting with a patient, no matter what he or she says or what he or she has done. They have found that it's only when a person feels totally accepted by another that he or she can relax and express his or her deepest concerns honestly and be helped back to inner peace. Perhaps the simplest and the most powerful thing you can do to make people feel good about themselves is to smile. Whenever you smile at another person, the other person feels important. He or she feels recognized and admired and accepted unconditionally. Their self-image improves and their self-esteem goes up. They feel good about themselves, and in return, they feel good about you. And all it costs is a simple smile. The third key to success with others is appreciation. Whenever you show or express gratitude to anyone for anything, they feel more important and valuable. And the key to expressing appreciation is simply to say thank you at every opportunity. I've traveled in many countries all over the world, and the first words I always learn are please and thank you. I've found that if you're polite and appreciative, you seldom have any problems anywhere. People will open their doors and their hearts to you. You'll have all kinds of opportunities that simply would not be offered to a person who is rude or demanding. There's a basic rule that says, what gets rewarded gets done. A paraphrase of this rule is, what gets thanked gets repeated. One of the kindest things you can do for the people around you is to thank them for everything they do and continue saying thank you until they ask you to stop, but don't hold your breath. Thank your spouse for every large and small thing that he or she does. Thank your children for their help and cooperation. Thank your boss and your coworkers and your staff for everything and anything that they do to assist you in any way. Thank the waiters and waitresses in the restaurants you go to, and thank anyone anywhere who waits on you or helps you in any capacity. A wonderful way to increase your popularity is for you to develop what is called an attitude of gratitude. Develop the habit of silently giving thanks for everything that happens to you, even a parking stall or a green light. An attitude of gratitude enriches you in many ways. It makes you more resilient to the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. It makes you stronger and more positive and more capable of dealing with the inevitable ups and downs of your life. It builds within you a tremendous strength that enables you to bounce back from adversity. Sometimes people feel that they don't have very much to be thankful for. I have a friend who was kept in a North Vietnamese prison cell measuring 8 feet by 8 feet for 6 years. On top of that, he was beaten and tortured and starved on a regular basis. Well, he was tested on his return, And he came out more mentally healthy than many members of the population because he practiced being grateful every day that he was imprisoned. No matter what your situation might be, when you compare your problems with the situation of a prisoner of war, you realize that you have an enormous amount to be thankful for. You have freedom and opportunity and the power of choice. You have the people around you and your health and the fact that you live in perhaps the best country in the world. You can do what you want to do and you can go where you want to go. And you have a good life that is getting better every single day, completely determined and self-directed by yourself. You have an enormous amount to be grateful for. The more you let this attitude of gratitude fill your whole personality, the more positive and appreciative you'll be toward others, and the more popular and likable you will be. A fourth way to improve your relationships with others is to practice admiration at every opportunity. Abraham Lincoln once said that everybody likes a compliment. Always be perfectly sincere when you give a compliment, but always compliment things that you like and respect and admire. The best things to admire are the character traits, the possessions, and the accomplishments of other people. We each invest an enormous amount of our emotions in these things, and whenever they're admired or respected by another, our own sense of value and importance grows tremendously. If you admire how hard a person works, or the fact that he or she is always punctual or very accurate and detail-oriented doing their job, not only will people strive to repeat those behaviors, but they will feel wonderful about themselves and about the fact that you noticed it. Remember, the more emotion a person has invested in something, the more powerful and significant will be your compliment when you give it. When you admire specific items of clothing worn by a man or woman, they will often remember your remarks for years. Always be sincere. Never say anything that you don't really mean. People are like human lie detectors. The average individual can sense insincerity from across a crowded room, and if you say something that you don't really believe, it will almost always backfire and have exactly the opposite effect in terms of building a more positive relationship with that person. Always be truthful, and always speak from your heart. The fifth way to make people feel important and to raise their self-esteem is to practice giving approval and praise wherever and whenever it's deserved. Praise people for both small and large accomplishments. My friend Ken Blanchard, in his book, The 1 Minute Manager, recommended the importance of what he called 1 Minute Praisings. He advised that one of the best things that a manager or a parent could do was to catch people doing something right. The more you praise and approve particular behaviors, the more you reinforce them, and the more likely it is that those behaviors will be repeated. In fact, the work in behavioral psychology suggests that the very best way to get a person to stop engaging in negative behavior is simply to ignore it. But if you ignore negative behaviors and at the same time practice praising people for positive behaviors at every occasion, eventually they'll do more and more positive things that get praised and have less and less time in the day for unproductive behaviors. Here's another important point. Any praise coming from someone who we respect and look up to has an inordinate impact on our self-esteem and on our self-image. This form of recognition is a great people builder in organizations, and it's a wonderful way to make and deepen friendships in your personal life. Napoleon was famous for the way in which he motivated his armies to conquer all of Europe. When he was asked his secret, he said, "I have learned a remarkable thing. Men will die for ribbons." Praise is so powerful that it seems to actually energize men and women who are subjected to it. Even tired children seem to brighten up considerably when they're praised by their parents and teachers. It's so effective that it's important that you learn how to praise properly. And here are 4 rules that you can follow. First, praise immediately. The more rapidly you praise and recognize positive behavior, the more likely it is that that behavior will be repeated. And praise can be both tangible and intangible. It can consist of the words you say, or it can be expressed in the rewards that you give. But whichever, the closer the connection between the praise and the performance, the more impact it will have on the personality and the future behavior of the individual receiving the praise. praise delayed loses its reinforcing power. Second, praise specifically. Rather than saying something like, you're doing a really great job, say rather, you've done a beautiful job on this report for the meeting tomorrow. When you praise a specific behavior, you can expect to have that behavior repeated very soon. Rather than say to your child, you're a great kid, it's better to say, you did a fine job cleaning up your room. Third, praise in public whenever possible. Praise given in front of other people is multiplied in its impact. Recognition and prizes given in front of the entire company have an inordinate influence on future behaviors. The more ceremony that you can attach to the awarding of praise, the more motivated everyone will be to engage in the same performance in the future. And fourth, praise continuously to develop a habit. But once the habit is developed, praise only intermittently to maintain it. Let me explain. You praise continuously by mentioning the behavior and complimenting the individual every single time it occurs. If you praise a person over and over, the person will engage in the behavior repeatedly until it becomes a habit. Then, you only need to praise the behavior every third or fourth time for the habit to continue. So the keys to praise are, first, praise immediately. Second, praise specifically. Third, praise in public. And fourth, praise continually to build the habit, and then every third or fourth time to keep the habit in place. The sixth key to building excellent human relationships and to becoming a popular person in everything you do is as important as anything else, and it consists of learning to listen. We call this the practice of attention. In reality, life is the study of attention. Wherever your attention is, there you will also find your mind and your heart. We always pay attention to that which we most value, and we ignore or refrain from paying attention to that which we do not value. Whenever we pay attention to another person, we are paying value to that person. We are saying in no uncertain terms that we consider that person to be valuable and worthwhile. It's been said that we have two ears and one mouth, and that we should use them in the same proportion, 2-1. Successful people, leaders in every field, find that they spend as much as 50-60% of their time listening to other people. And you can dramatically increase your effectiveness in your interactions with others by simply becoming a skillful listener. In everything you do and everywhere you go, when you develop the reputation of being a sincere listener, people will open up their hearts and their minds and the doors of opportunity for you. Here are the keys to good listening. First, listen attentively with your whole body. Put all distractions out of your mind. Take a deep breath and focus all of your attention on what the other person is saying. Turn toward the other person and face him or her directly. This is a great compliment and causes him or her to feel very warmly toward you. Second, listen without interruptions. Listen as though you have all the time in the world. Most people don't really listen at all when another is speaking, but instead they are busy preparing their responses. Avoid this trap by remembering that you don't have to respond at all. Third, pause before replying. When you pause, you avoid the possibility of interrupting if the person has just stopped to gather his or her thoughts. When you pause, you indicate clearly that you are giving the speaker's words careful consideration before answering. And most of all, when you pause, you actually hear the person better. The speaker's words soak into your mind to a deeper level, and you become more aware of the real message that the speaker is trying to convey. Pausing pleasantly and patiently is a hallmark of good listening. Fourth, question for clarification. Ask questions that begin with the words what, how, who, where, when, why. In any conversation, the person who asks questions has control. Finally, especially in an important conversation, paraphrase what the person has said and feed it back in your own words before responding. Say something like, let me make sure I have this right. What you're saying seems to be this. And then go on and restate the person's position in your own words. This final step, paraphrasing what's been said, really shows the other person that you have been paying close attention. It confirms to the other person his or her own sense of self-worth and personal value. It demonstrates that what he or she has been saying is truly important to you. Perhaps the most important part of this skill is that listening builds trust. There's no faster way to build a bridge of trust and understanding between two people than to listen patiently and sincerely to each other. Men, women, salespeople, business people, and those from every walk of life can dramatically increase their effectiveness by building the trust and rapport that only comes from good listening. When you come out of yourself and focus the spotlight of attention on the other person, you start to become unaware of yourself and begin to perform at your natural best. Your nervousness and self-consciousness disappear. You effortlessly become an excellent communicator, and people are happier to see you and interact with you. Probably the very best rule that you can follow to improve your self-confidence and your ability to get along with others is the golden rule of human relationships. This rule simply says to treat other people the way you would like to be treated. Think of the nicest people you know and how good you feel about yourself when you're with them, and then resolve to treat other people the same way. Listen to other people the way you would like to be listened to. Say the kind of things to other people that make you feel good about yourself. Every time you practice this simple rule, you will make people feel glad that they talked to you. And when you know that you're getting along well with others, your self-confidence goes straight up. In the entire science of self-confidence, nothing is more important than your ability to enter into a long-term, intimate relationship with a member of the opposite sex. Each person is born incomplete and is only truly happy and satisfied when he or she finds the right person and enters into a secure, lasting relationship with that person. Your ability to succeed in your closest personal relationships affects your self-confidence in every other area of your life. Most young people chop and change and experiment widely in their 20s. They go out with a variety of members of the opposite sex as they learn more about what it is they really want in a relationship. At the same time, they change jobs far more frequently, they spend everything they earn and more, and they often move around from place to place. But when you settle down into a permanent relationship, your whole orientation changes. You develop a longer time perspective on your decisions and actions. You become more responsible. You begin to accumulate assets, and you're more thoughtful in handling your money. Most of all, you begin to feel more connected with other people and with your society. You have a greater sense of belonging to your community. You feel more like a part of a greater entity. Your self-esteem and self-confidence go up. The overarching goal of every person is happiness and peace of mind. And your happiness and peace of mind are inextricably interlinked with whether or not you're in a strong, stable relationship and getting along well with that other person. Everything you do that increases your ability to improve the quality of your relationship also increases your self-confidence and self-esteem. A good relationship gives you the strength and courage to take on ever greater challenges and opportunities. Being happily involved with the right person clarifies your vision and causes you to set ever bigger goals for yourself. It gives you a sense of inner security that is expressed in higher levels of optimism and a positive mental attitude toward virtually everything you do. The question naturally arises, if everyone wants a happy and loving relationship, why is it that so few people, by their own admission, manage to achieve it? Why is it that so many people are single, alone, and unhappy, or in marriages and relationships that are empty and unsatisfying? Why is it that people do not have the love they want and need in their lives? And more importantly, what are the specific things that you can do to dramatically enhance the quality of your loving relationships? The law of correspondence says that your outer world is merely a mirror image reflection of your inner world. Your relationships in every part of your life reflect back to you exactly the kind of person you are. Your relationships contain and include all of your thoughts, feelings, attitudes, fears, and desires. Most of what you see in your relationship or marriage is actually a manifestation of what is going on inside of you. Your relationships are a measure of the person you really are. Whenever you're having difficulty in your relationship, you should ask, what is it in me that is causing this other person to behave this way? Or you can ask, what is it in me that is causing this relationship to happen in this way? As you change what is going on inside yourself, you'll see the same changes take place in the people around you. By changing yourself, you change them. By becoming a better person, your relationships get better. By becoming a more patient, loving, and happy person, your relationships become more relaxed, more happy, and more loving. Truly loving people have little difficulty in forming truly loving relationships. The law of attraction simply says that you are a living magnet and that you inevitably attract into your life the people and circumstances in harmony with your dominant thoughts. All the people around you have been attracted to you by the kind of person you are. You can change the people around you by changing the kind of person you are. As you go to work to change yourself by dwelling on the positive qualities that you admire and aspire to, you immediately change the force field of energy around you, and you begin drawing into your life people who are more like your new ideals. The great mistake that most people make is that they attempt to change other people to be more like what they want rather than going to work to change themselves. However, when you think honestly of how hard it is to change even the smallest thing in yourself, you will despair of ever making any significant changes in the behavior or personality of another person. Everything that we've talked about in general on how to get along well with other people applies with equal force to your marriage and to your relationships with members of the opposite sex. For example, if you want to be happy with another person of your choice, become the kind of happy person that he or she would like to be around. Be pleasant and agreeable. Be cheerful and supportive. Make the other person feel important by validating and reinforcing their self-worth. And the easiest way to do this is simply to go along with their innermost beliefs and convictions. Just be agreeable. You can practice acceptance by taking the other person exactly as he or she is, without suggesting that the other person needs to change their appearance or behavior in some way. You can practice appreciation by thanking the other person for every small or large thing that he or she does or says that pleases you. Be sure to admire the positive qualities and attractive possessions of the other person. Be generous in expressing praise and approval for anything and everything that the other person does that's worthwhile. Praise and approval raises a person's self-esteem and causes them to feel more valuable, more worthwhile, and more loving in your presence. Above all, be a good listener. Each person has a deep need to communicate their innermost thoughts and concerns to another person, and they are invariably attracted to the person who will listen to them most openly and honestly. Many men and women have discovered that close attention to what a person is saying is the highest form of flattery. As we said, listening builds trust and intimacy and is the foundation of excellent communications between two people. And the ability to communicate well is the absolute requirement for happiness between two people. In every study of men and women who have been together happily for many years, they conclude that spending long periods of unbroken time with each other is the glue that holds the relationship together. Each person has a deep need to express himself or herself to another person and to be listened to and heard without judgment or interruption. If we don't get a chance to get all of our talking out of our systems, it bottles up inside of us and we become frustrated. Almost all problems in relationships begin because couples do not keep the lines of communication wide open between them. Perhaps the quality that most assures good communications between two people and which guarantees a long-term, happy relationship is the quality of commitment. Couples who are happy together are totally committed to each other. They look upon the other person as their very best friend. When two people are in the right relationship, they enjoy each other's company so much that there is no one else that they would rather spend time with. When the relationship is right, the two people cannot imagine not being together, and they never even consider it or discuss it. They each feel themselves to be half of a whole, incomplete without each other, and totally committed to being together forever. In fact, the decision to absolutely commit yourself without reservation to a relationship is an absolute requirement for happiness in that relationship. And while commitment does not guarantee complete success in a relationship, a lack of commitment will almost certainly guarantee ultimate failure. Charles Murray once wrote, "Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is an elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans, that the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that never would have otherwise occurred. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, rising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents and meetings and material assistance which no man could have dreamed would have come his way. You can only communicate and express yourself openly and honestly to another person when you feel, deep in your heart, that the other person has burned his or her mental bridges and has made a complete commitment to you and to this relationship. If commitment is the key to a happy love relationship, then why is it that so many people have difficulty making this kind of commitment? This brings us right back to the question of self-confidence and self-esteem. You can only like or love another person to the degree to which you like or love yourself. And having the confidence to commit and to enter into loving relationships is determined solely by your own personal level of self-esteem. The more of your personality and your motivations that are clear to you and clear to others, the healthier and happier and less complicated or disturbed you will be. Well, how is this to be achieved? All of psychotherapy and personality development is based on the simple premise of self-disclosure. You understand yourself to the exact degree to which you can explain what you are thinking and feeling to another person, the degree to which you can put it into words. When you feel confident enough in another person that you can relax and tell that person what is going on deep in your mind without fear of rejection or criticism, it is only then that you fully understand that dimension of your personality. It's only then that you are free and happy in that area. In psychotherapy, it's generally accepted that the reason a person is unhappy is because there's something that they're not dealing with. As soon as the person can honestly discuss their problem with at least one other person, they're free of much of the negativity associated with that problem. That part of their personality moves from the hidden or unknown into the known. Meaningful and relevant self-disclosure leads to higher levels of self-awareness. The more of yourself that you can honestly disclose to another person, the more aware you are of yourself. Instead of suppressing or repressing your true thoughts and feelings, you can let them out and see more of who you really are and more of what is possible for you. Greater self-awareness, in turn, leads automatically to greater self-acceptance. The more you know about yourself, the more you accept yourself as a valuable and worthwhile person. The real aim in personality development is for you to reach the point where you accept yourself unconditionally. You accept yourself and think of yourself as being a pretty good person overall. You accept yourself, as Cromwell said, warts and all. And you stop being concerned or preoccupied with your shortcomings. When you accept yourself, you start to like yourself and then to love yourself. Your regard for yourself goes up, and you think of yourself as a valuable and important and worthwhile human being. And with high self-esteem, not only are you ready to move toward peak performance in your activities, but you also become a warm, positive, loving person, and you begin to attract other people similar to yourself into your life. All your relationships improve. You become a more popular personality, and you become more sensitive and more aware of the needs of others. As your self-esteem goes up, you stop being preoccupied with yourself and start finding yourself really enjoying the lives and the company of other people. And the quality of your loving relationships goes up dramatically, like the mercury in a thermometer on a hot day. A truly loving relationship with a person with whom you are completely compatible is exactly what each person needs to complete himself or herself as a human being. This is exactly what you need to achieve and maintain a high level of self-confidence. And each previous session in this program contributes to long-term relationships in some way. For instance, when you establish your values and organize them in order of importance to you, and then make a commitment to live your life consistent with those values, you are going through a process that leads to greater awareness, greater self-acceptance, and higher self-esteem. You are laying down the foundation of true self-confidence. When you set high, challenging goals for yourself, goals that make you stretch toward the outer edge of your abilities, and then commit yourself wholeheartedly toward their achievement, you raise your level of self-esteem and self-confidence, and you keep them high as long as you're working progressively toward achieving something that's important to you. When you commit yourself to lifelong learning, to becoming competent in your field, and then to achieving mastery in your chosen area, you are, by the law of indirect effort, making yourself into a more positive and attractive person. As you take full control of your mind and keep your words and thoughts and mental pictures consistent with the very best person you can be, you activate all the mental laws and create within yourself a tremendous feeling of well-being that generates a steady flow of energy and self-confidence. As you become better and more capable in getting along with a greater number of people, your confidence and your ability to interact effectively in all your human relations goes up, and you become unafraid of new situations involving different people. At every step of this program, as you apply the lessons, you are building yourself brick by brick into the kind of person you really want to be. Now let's talk about some of the differences between men and women and how these differences often lead to misunderstandings and breakdowns in the communication that is so important to our mental health and happiness. First of all, men and women are distinctly different from each other. In the practical material world, they may have similar goals and objectives, but in the personal subjective world, men and women have distinctly different motivations, desires, instincts, and ways of looking at life and relationships. Some of these are obvious, and some of these are not so obvious. In order to survive and thrive with members of the opposite sex, it's very helpful for us to appreciate some basic elements. Men, for example, have a tendency to be more direct, more practical, and more left brain or linear in their thinking. They have more of the hormone testosterone, and as a result, they tend to be more aggressive in their orientation toward life. Men tend to be more competitive and job-oriented, continually comparing their achievements with those of other men. Men tend to identify very strongly with their work and to tie up much of their self-concept in their occupations. The extreme version of this tendency, of course, is called the type A personality. The type A personality is so caught up in his work that he gives very little thought to anything else. He feels like he is on a treadmill or in a rat race. He has what has been called a harrying sense of time urgency. He has more and more to do and less time in which to do it. He seldom, if ever, takes a vacation, and if he does, he takes his work along with him. He is extremely aggressive and hostile to those he feels he's competing with, even with his family if they want more of his time. He has an obsession with his boss and is continually talking about what the boss did and said and what the boss might be thinking. The true type A male, the extreme case, becomes more thing-oriented than people-oriented and begins to take his personal and family relationships for granted. He has what is called the compulsive negative habit pattern, which is rooted in a deep-seated fear of rejection and a feeling of unworthiness that goes back to having experienced conditional love from his father. He strives to get the approval from his work and his boss that he felt he never got unconditionally from his father when he was growing up. The type A's preoccupation with his work becomes a major flashpoint at home because it simply does not seem rational or reasonable to his wife. He often says that he's doing what he's doing for the sake of his wife and children, but they disagree and wish that he worked less and spent more time with them. Men in general are very much into closure or completion. Lack of completion is very stressful for them. They are most interested in discussing situations where there are clear conclusions or resolutions, and their conversations are often oriented toward goals and objectives, toward finishing things and getting things done. Men also have a tendency to be simple and direct and largely uncomplicated in their thinking. They tend to think and talk in terms of facts and conclusions. Any woman listening to this will immediately recognize that her way of thinking is very different from what I've just described. To begin with, women have a richer, more complex, and more interesting inner life. They're aware of far more details and subtleties and nuances than men are. They see more possibilities and ramifications and consequences in a given situation than does the male of the species. If men tend to be direct, women tend to be indirect. Women are more subtle and roundabout in their approach to people and situations. If a woman is having a problem with someone, she thinks of the various ways that the subject could be approached so as to win the cooperation of the other person and to not make waves. A man in the same situation would tend to deal with the problem or person directly. Now, either approach might be successful depending upon the circumstances, but the evidence is that women are more successful than men in dealing with complex interpersonal situations. Women tend to be more emotional, more intuitive, more sensitive, and more aware of how other people are thinking and feeling than men are. Women tend to organize their lives around their relationships, around both their family and their friends. They're much more sensitive to and affected by problems in relationships than men are. Here are some examples that illustrate the differences between men and women in the way they see the world. A husband and wife fly to Orlando and rent a car with the intention of driving south to Miami. They get on the freeway and she's the navigator, looking at the map and the road signs. He's unfamiliar with the roads and suddenly she sees a sign that indicates that they are heading north toward Jacksonville. She asks him, "Honey, is Miami on the road to Jacksonville?" He says, "No, Jacksonville is in the opposite direction." She says, "Well, we just passed the sign saying that we are heading toward Jacksonville." "Never mind," he says, "we're making great time." The tendency of the typical man is to step on the gas and go faster when he finds himself on the wrong road, while the tendency of the woman is to stop and think about where she is and where she wants to go. Another example of the differences between men and women is with regard to shopping. When a man and woman go shopping together, all he wants to do is to get it over with before the walls close in around him. All she wants to do is to use shopping as an opportunity to communicate. When she shows him a blouse and asks his opinion, she is inviting dialogue. Instead, he says, "It looks great. Go ahead and get it." After a couple of hours of shopping, a woman may not have purchased anything. He will probably be tearing his hair out by this time, and she will then suggest that they have coffee or lunch. He is still looking around and seeking some way to achieve closure or completion in this process, and until the shopping trip is over, the typical man will be uncomfortable and feel a little bit like a fish out of water. The difference here is that men are simple and direct and want completion, whereas women are complex and subtle and are quite content to simply enjoy the process. Here's another example showing the difference between men and women. A couple is on a motor trip, and they've been on the road for 2 or 3 hours. As they drive down the highway past a McDonald's, she turns to him and says, "Honey, are you thirsty?" Without looking around, he simply replies, "Nope," and continues driving. After a while, he notices that she is not talking, And when he asks her, what's the matter? She replies, nothing. In her indirect way, she was saying that she was thirsty and was suggesting that they stop. In his direct way, he was simply replying to her question and continued driving. His mind was on the destination, on completing the trip, and he was completely unaware that she was thirsty and that she wanted to stop. And by the way, when a man asks, what's the matter, and a woman replies, nothing, it is a very clear sign that something is the matter, and if the man is smart, he will pick up this signal and go to work to find out what it is. Because women are indirect, they tend to be better listeners and more sensitive to relationships than men. According to Cosmopolitan magazine, men are 94% more likely to interrupt a woman who is speaking than a woman is to interrupt a man. When a man interrupts a woman, he is making a big mistake. Not only is he telling her that he doesn't take her seriously, but he is also devaluing and diminishing her as a person. By not respecting her when she is speaking, he is unwittingly attacking her self-respect. And we know that whenever our self-respect or self-esteem is assaulted in any way, we have a tendency to counterattack. We often become angry and defensive and strike back in whatever way we can. This is just another example of the law of reciprocity in action, and it governs almost all relationships. For men, one of the best ways to keep the channels of communication clear is to come home at night and to resist the temptation to tell her everything about his day. Instead, he should ask her about her day. He should ask her what she did and where she went and who she spoke to and what happened as a result. He should encourage her to explain her entire day before he goes on to tell her about his day. This simple exercise of turning the standard tables of conversation will go a long way to enhancing the quality of the relationship. It's amazing how interesting her day has been and how much more enjoyable their relationship will be when they continue to share in this way. And by the way, I've never met a woman who wouldn't gladly throw the television set in the trash can if it meant that TV watching time would now be spent communicating with her and interacting with the family. Here's another common occurrence which shows the difference between the needs and expectations of men and women. The woman tells the man about a problem she is having in her work. He immediately goes into problem-solving and a closure mode. He asks her a couple of questions about the situation, and then he says, why don't you do this, or you should just do that. What he doesn't realize is that when she tells him of her problem, she does not necessarily want him to propose a solution at all. The problem is merely presented as an opportunity to talk. She has presented the problem as a device to trigger a dialogue so that the couple can communicate. If he gives her a quick solution, then she will feel frustrated, and he won't even know what's happened. The very best thing that a man can do in a relationship is to listen and to ask questions like, why do you feel that way? The very best thing that a woman can do is to realize that men deal with things differently from women and to take that into consideration. Remember, the most important thing in the world is love. First, self-love, then love of others, then love of one other person with whom you can establish a deep and lasting relationship. Out of loving and being loved arises a wonderful feeling of self-confidence that gives you the courage to attempt things that you might never have thought possible. Knowing that you are truly loved and that you have earned it and that you deserve it saves you an enormous amount of time and energy and allows you to focus on making your life into a wonderful experience. Your willingness and your ability to do everything necessary to enter into a long-term fulfilling relationship with another person is the true measure of how you're doing as a human being. And you can never have more love for yourself than the amount that you can express to another person. Every time you think and act in a loving way, your own self-love and self-confidence goes up. Love is by far the most important thing of all. And if you do the things that other loving people do, you will enjoy the same feelings and the same results.